This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Osteothera plus Ipraflavone from Claire Labs. As we age, forestalling and even reversing bone loss becomes more and more important. Osteothera plus Ipraflavone is a comprehensive formulation that supports optimal bone density. Osteothera plus Ipraflavone is vital for supporting the body in the formation and regeneration of bone to ensure your optimal skeletal health. For more information and to purchase Osteothera plus Ipraflavone, just go to my online dispensary at drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to talk about homeopathy. Homeopathy recently was plunged into controversy, not that it hasn't been controversial over many years, but it's a modality that has found itself the brunt of attacks across the pond in England. The National Health Service stopped funding homeopathy. Here in the States, the FDA has proposed new regulations for homeopathic remedies. And so to set the record straight and to inform us of the true facts around this, because there's a lot of clickbait journalism that surrounds homeopathy, is our go-to person on the subject of homeopathy. He's been a frequent contributor here on Intelligent Medicine on the predecessor show, Health Talk, over many years. I've known Dana Ullman for, I don't even want to say how long, many decades. We were there at the very inception of this movement together. As young firebrands, he in the realm of homeopathy, me in the realm of integrative medicine. He's the author of many books, including the groundbreaking scholarly research and popularly written The Homeopathic Revolution, Why Famous People and Cultural Heroes Choose Homeopathy, Everybody's Guide to Homeopathic Medicine, which is a real popular bestseller, also Homeopathic Medicines for Children and Infants, Homeopathy A to Z, Discovering Homeopathy, and his newest book is Essential Homeopathy. And he also has been a popular columnist at the Huffington Post. He has co-taught a 10-week course on homeopathy at the University of California at San Francisco School of Medicine. By the way, that's where he, actually at Berkeley is where you got your master's in public health, I believe. And he also has served as a member of advisory boards of alternative medicine institutes at Columbia University, and helped coordinate the curriculum in homeopathy to physicians who are in the University of Arizona's program in integrative medicine, the program founded by Dr. Andrew Weil, and many, many more accolades, too many to enumerate here. So let's get right into it. Dana, it's a pleasure having you back on Intelligent Medicine. How are you doing?
It's a pleasure to reconnect with you, Dr. Hoffman, Ron, whatever, you know,
yeah,
blessings
please.
To you.
Yes.
And look forward to dancing with you further.
Okay, great. So, you know, let's grab the bull by the horns because, we can do a general rundown of the principles of homeopathy and talk about some of its applicability. But homeopathy finds itself embroiled lately, I think you would admit. In England, where homeopathy is quite popular, and as you wrote in one of your books, it was embraced by your royalty and celebrities, and really was part of the medical system there. The National Health Service took an unprecedented step in stopping funding of homeopathy, and here in the States, something's going on here. You know, there was an erroneous headline put out by one of my integrative colleagues, Dr. Mercola, at the beginning of, I guess it was this year or last year, and it's something to the effect that all homeopathic drugs are now illegal, that the FDA was declaring them unlawful. And that was, you know, sort of one of those clickbait headlines, call to action, you know, getting people all riled up. But the truth is a little more subtle than that, I think, isn't it?
That's right. That's right. And Dr. Mercola was kind enough and honest enough of a man that when I wrote to him expressing concern, he asked me, well, what would I say differently? And I sent him an article that I had written, and he published it at his website, my article.
In its entirety, to really set the record straight.
Yeah, in its entirety, unedited.
Okay.
And he's allowed me to do that on a couple occasions. And he normally just has his own staff write articles under his pen name. But he's made some exceptions in homeopathy because, you know, to write on homeopathy sometimes requires a little bit more technical background in the subject and more familiarity with the body of scientific evidence that exists. And it's much more significant than people realize. And that's part of the challenge that homeopathy brings to the table. One is that throughout the world, it's practiced largely by medical doctors. So that's pretty threatening to the conventional mindset. And two, inherent in homeopathy is a certain critique of conventional medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what I mean by that is in homeopathy, we believe in evolution. And we assert that conventional doctors give lip service to evolution. And the reason I say that is that for those of us that believe in evolution, our symptoms from an evolutionary point of view are our body's defenses. That fever, that nasal discharge, that diarrhea, even that high blood pressure, that's adaptations of our body mind to try to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And in conventional medicine, the assumption all too often is whatever the body's doing, it's wrong. So you've got to lower the fever. You've got to stop the diarrhea. You've got to, you know, dry up the mucous membranes and stop that nose from running. So in homeopathy, we respect the wisdom of the body and we look for a medicine in nature that when given in really small nano-sized dose will mimic the very symptoms the sick person is having. So instead of suppressing the symptoms, you turn into the skin. You look for a substance that mimics that. And that's why Stuart Brand, the founder of the Holder Catalog, called homeopathy medical Aikido several decades ago.
Hmm.
And so, and if you think about it from an immunological point of view, the whole field of immunology looks to do that, looks to give a small dose mm-hmm. of what might cause a problem to stimulate the body's own defenses to defend it or to heal it.
Correct.
Even the first scientist to win the Nobel Prize in Medicine for discovering both the tetanus vaccine and the diphtheria vaccine acknowledged that he got the idea from homeopathy.
Okay. And so inherent in treatment with homeopathy, I mean, I personally, let me just, full disclosure here, I am not a homeopath. Actually, some people come to me and say, oh, well, you're a homeopath. And they use that term sort of indiscriminately to describe yeah. integrative doctors. They're homeopaths. And no, I'm not an allopath. An allopath is a conventionally oriented physician, but that does not mean that I'm a homeopath. I utilize occasionally some homeopathic remedies, but when somebody requires specialized homeopathic care, I refer them to someone who is very, very well versed in homeopathy and does it all the time.
And that's a smart thing to do.
Yeah, because I think you can't. I mean, something. I guess there's an element of homeopathic self-care, which you talk about in your books. You know, homeopathic medicines for children and infants, homeopathy A to Z. I think it's nice sometimes when parents are equipped with a little basic knowledge and a sort of a first aid kit for minor health issues. But I think to really do homeopathy right, I think it requires a great deal of background and experience and a clinical focus where you just, you know, it's not just one among many of your bags of tricks. So
for that matter, it's a little like acupuncture where, you know, you don't want to be dabbling in acupuncture. You really have to know the system.
Exactly. So inherent in this is something called the healing crisis, which is an interesting concept within homeopathy, right?
Absolutely. And it makes sense. What happens and what Dr. Hoffman is talking about, and one of the really strong bits of evidence to show that homeopathic medicines are not just a placebo, is that in about 20 to 30% of patients who have a chronic illness, when you give them the right homeopathic medicine, they don't just get better, but for a 12 to 72 hour period, they may get worse temporarily. So the woman with a fibroid or, you know, hormonal difficulty may have an early menstruation that's profuse, that's cramping, and that's clot filled. But that's their body mind helping to clean out that reproductive tract so that the next month the menstrual cycle will be normal and will not have that degree of cramping or heavy bleeding or heavy clotting. And so we also see that some patients experience a skin discharge, some type of rash, as though their body is externalizing a problem. And then third, we also see patients re-experience old symptoms that they may have had 1 year ago, 5 years ago, or even 20 years ago, as though that previous symptom may have been suppressed and not really fully healed, and the body has to retrace it. And this clearly is not a placebo effect when people get worse before they get better.
It's kind of the opposite of a placebo effect, right? Yeah. So it's like, here's something that's going to help you, and then people, you know, go through a healing crisis, and, you know, you kind of have to nurture them through that. Yeah. And, you know, ultimately they'll emerge to the other side with their condition improved. But coming back to the FDA's new approach to homeopathy, what's going to happen? Does that mean many currently available homeopathic remedies will disappear from store shelves? What's going on there?
Right. Well, first of all, we don't yet know what the FDA is going to do. They put out an idea for what they're going to do, but they were still extremely vague on it. And that's what the homeopaths expressed concern about, because we weren't clear what they were talking about. But generally, they have made it clear that the vast majority of homeopathic medicines will not be influenced in any shape, way, or form.
Okay. Now, there was also some talk of labeling homeopathic remedies with, you know, almost like a cigarette-type label saying, these remedies have not been shown to be helpful for anything at all, you know, something to that effect.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, what's happening there is that homeopathic medicines have a long history of collaboration with the FDA, because in the 1930s, the senator from New York who created the legislation that empowered the FDA was not just a senator, he was a medical doctor. And he was not just a medical doctor, he was a homeopathic medical doctor.
Oh.
Royal Copeland, who FDR was his campaign manager the first time he ran.
Wow.
And after his third election, he then got past the Federal Food, Drugs, and Cosmetics Act of 1938, which many scholars consider to be the most important consumer rights legislation ever written. And 3 days after it was passed and signed into law, the senator and doctor passed away. So his work was complete in his life.
Right.
And it gave recognition to the homeopathic pharmacopoeia on a similar level as the United States pharmacopoeia. And so in that the FDA was now going to be regulating all types of drugs, and homeopaths have been very critical of the government in the past, which wasn't regulating drugs adequately. So we've had a collaborative relationship with the FDA. But because the medicines are legally recognized as drugs versus herbs and foods, which are considered supplements or foods, you're not supposed to have a disease claim on a supplement. You can have a structure function claim, but not a disease claim. And homeopathic medicines, because they're drugs, are required to have a disease claim.
Yeah.
So they may say, well, you can have these medicines, but you can't say what they're good for. They may do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, so it just, that brings up a point, because I think, you know, there's classical homeopathy, which is using very, very minute amounts of substances on either in either a liquid form, a tincture, or in a on a little tiny sugar pill. But then there's also, I think some of the manufacturers have been kind of playing fast and loose with the homeopathic definition, and they kind of skirt around these requirements that are dictated about supplements, you know, where you can't make disease claims, by claiming that their product is, quote, homeopathic. So they can make a little more ambitious claims. And the dosages are akin to commonly available herbs, right?
Well, here's what I see happening. First of all, because homeopathic medicines in America are what are called over-the-counter drugs, which means that you don't need to be a doctor to prescribe them or to buy them, and because they are basically safe. But no over-the-counter drug can say that it's good for a condition, a serious disease that requires a medical diagnosis. So that's why you'll never see a homeopathic medicine marketed for heart disease or right. cancer right. or multiple sclerosis or diabetes. But you will see them for headache. You will see them right. for arthritis. You will see them for PMS right. or teething right. or the like. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, and I've carefully reviewed online stuff, there's very few companies that are breaking that rule. Mm-hmm. And people and companies that do deserve to be reprimanded.
Yeah.
Now, homeopaths themselves can and will practice and treat people with these serious illnesses, but they're not selling generic remedies for people with that disease that aren't getting individualized, treatment. Mm-hmm. And so I think what the FDA is doing is just putting a bigger warning out there saying, look, if any companies are going to even think about doing this, then, we're going to come down hard and heavy on you. And to be honest, I support the FDA in that.
Okay. And that's a very responsible position to take. Okay, folks, at this point, let's pause and allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share this important message with you. Here goes. As we age, forestalling and even reversing bone loss becomes more and more important. This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman with a comprehensive formulation that supports optimal bone density to ensure your future bone health. It's Osteothera plus Ipraflavone from Claire Labs. Osteothera plus Ipraflavone helps inhibit bone resorption and promotes new bone formation. The Osteothera plus Ipraflavone formulation is vital for supporting the body in the formation and regeneration of bone to ensure your optimal skeletal health. I believe in Osteothera plus Ipraflavone so much that I've included it in the Intelligent Medicine Bone Health Protocol, and I recommend it to my patients. For more information and to purchase Osteothera plus Ipraflavone, just go to my online dispensary at drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com. drhoffmanstore.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a free resource to you. And now back to our guest, Dana Ullman. Now, one of the events that precipitated this crackdown, or at least, at the very least, this reevaluation of homeopathic remedies was something to do with teething remedies. And I don't know the facts around that. It is said that some kids came to harm because of a, quote, homeopathic remedy. I think it was Highland's teething remedy, really a quite popular homeopathic over-the-counter product that was said to have some potentially harmful ingredients and that created some untoward results. And I think one of the ingredients in question was belladonna. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. Belladonna, or deadly nightshade, is a very important drug in homeopathic medicine. And it is in such small dose in that Highland's teething tablet that even when the FDA, and the FDA has, really very modern technological devices that can look at nano doses of different ingredients, and they found nano amounts of certain chemicals from belladonna. Mm-hmm. But a person would have to eat something like 200 bottles of a teething tablet to possibly be exposed to enough of these alkaloids in belladonna to create any problem. And so, there are many of us that feel that the FDA was not showing adequate good faith. That just because they found these nano doses, that doesn't necessarily mean they caused a problem. Mm-hmm. In fact, there are other drugs on the market that use belladonna in small dose in much larger quantity than are available in homeopathic medicines, but are not seemingly a problem.
They seem to be prevalent in anti-diarrheal medication, I would think, right?
Belladonna has a long history as a medicine.
Yeah. Very popular, yeah. I mean, that's why belladonna, you know, comes from the notion that it dilates the pupils and it made you, you know, made women look prettier because they had
that's right.
that desirable, you know, dewy-eyed look.
All right. So, you know, here is where I think, and we wonder if Big Pharma is attacking a homeopathic company. They went after a leading product of the largest homeopathic company, and they made it so it required them to take that drug off the market. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to me, you know, I just know literally thousands of mothers that use this product to great benefit and were very upset that that product is not now available for their grandchildren.
Mm-hmm. Well, they also launched a real journalistic hatchet job on the product. I'm looking at a headline here. Quote, hundreds of babies harmed by homeopathic remedies, families say. Is there any truth behind that contention? Any demonstrable harm that would develop from these teething remedies?
What's worse is they even talked about a certain number of deaths. Yeah. And I looked up each and every death that was reported. Mm-hmm. And it's embarrassing what they actually found. First of all, these children were on multiple medications.
Yeah.
And recently had been vaccinated mm-hmm. to multiple vaccine substances. And so rather than look at anything else, they said, well, let's blame the homeopathic.
Yeah.
Because if you blame the big pharma companies, they're going to come out and defend themselves much more strongly than the homeopathic companies can afford to do.
Or as they said in the movie Casablanca, let's round up the usual suspects.
Yeah. But this is even worse. Yeah. Let's round up the competitors that are offering safer drugs so that we don't have as much competition.
Indeed. Situation in England, homeopathy is a dead issue, or is it simply a matter of now people have to pay their own discretionary dollars and the National Health Service doesn't subsidize it?
Well, let me say what's happening in England is really interesting. And I will tell you this, next month in July, I'm flying to London to attend a homeopathic research conference at the Royal Society of Medicine.
Lucky for you.
With two Nobel Prize winning scientists in attendance, including Montagné,
Montagné, very famous HIV researcher.
Who discovered the AIDS virus.
Yes, yes.
And Brian Josephson, a Cambridge professor of physics, who got his Nobel Prize at the old age of 23 years of age.
Mm.
And there'll be a bunch of other scientists speaking. But what's happened in England is, you know, first of all, there are medical doctors in England that practice homeopathy, including the physician to Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II and Prince Charles, and probably Meghan too, Meghan Markle, who has already expressed an interest in homeopathy and natural medicine, and her mother is a yoga teacher. But there are also what we call professional homeopaths, who are non-MDs, but who have gone to one of the 3 or 4 year homeopathic colleges, and now these professional homeopaths have never been a part of the National Health Service. And the MDs that are involved in homeopathy there, because homeopathy is more labor intensive, requires a longer interview to individualize the medicine. Most of the MDs in England are a pay for service clinician. So, I've had some colleagues that said around 1% of the population of people going to homeopaths will be influenced mm-hmm. by the National Health Service. But we wanted the National Health Service to support homeopathy because we want people of all economic classes mm-hmm. to be able to access safe and effective medicines. And so what the England law will now do is it won't enable poor people to get anything other than conventional medical care.
Mm, unfortunately, and very much resembling the situation here in the U.S., where you know, most integrative doctors don't accept you know, private insurance. It's, you know, because the insurance reimbursement is abysmal. You know, I've had my experience with Medicare, where because I was offering integrative services, I was heavily investigated, almost penalized, and I decided to just say, you know, I'm not going to be part of this because, you know, they just question when you spend an hour and a half with a patient and you don't end up prescribing a medication at the end of the encounter or a conventional medication, prescription drug. So, you know, I guess what we're seeing is a leveling of the playing field between England and the United States on that account. All right. Good point.
Well, I think this is big pharma driven, mind you. Think that there is a coordinated effort. And in England, in fact, the skeptics of alternative medicine there make the American skeptics look like puppy dogs because they're vicious in England. They make up stuff all the time. And they keep repeating this mantra that there's no evidence that homeopathic medicines work, even though there have been good studies published in The Lancet, the British Medical Journal, the Journal Pediatrics, the Journal Chest, the Journal Cancer, the Journal Rheumatology, the, you know, various pediatric journals in addition to the one I mentioned. And yet they continue to repeat lies like what we're seeing today in the American, by our American president. It's like they keep thinking that if they repeat a lie often enough, that people will believe it.
And I would also add, in some cases, our president's detractor. So let's on that note, I think it's a good point in which to pause, because let's talk in part two about some of the evidence that this actually works. It's not just a belief system or an ideology. There's a scientific basis to homeopathy, and we're going to explore that in part two of today's podcast with Dana Ullman. Dana is the director of the Homeopathic Education Service, and he's also the author of numerous books on homeopathy. He is America's go-to guy on the subject of homeopathy, and we're lucky to have him with us today. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.